All right, welcome back to another edition of the Sunstone Podcast. I'm your host, John Larson. I'm here with another fantastic group of folks. Well, in Salt Lake City, but Oasis is not a Salt Lake City thing. It was born elsewhere, no?
Yes. Correct.
So you guys are part of the Salt Lake City Oasis group. We're going to explore what that means, what you guys are doing, and how you're helping build community here in Salt Lake. First, let me have you kind of introduce yourselves. First, starting at my left, Sarah, we decided you're the exotic, you're our token exotic person.
So I can hold that down.
So welcome. So tell us a little bit about you, Sarah.
Oh, well, my name's Sarah, like you said, and I have been regularly visiting Oasis for almost 2 years now. And I just wanted to let people know what it's like to go to Oasis, what's available there, and what I've got out of it. I've got some really good, deep, profound friendships out of it. And a new kitchen floor. I've got a new kitchen floor out of going to Oasis as well. And that's something real and tangible, and you can put money on.
We can't guarantee that everyone will get a new kitchen floor. I've told the story before. When I was on a mission, I was with Laotian refugees in San Diego, and there was a nickname for the church. They called us the Couch Church, because when people would join the church, they'd get like the welfare slip. And these were refugees, you know, they were starting over, and then we would give them couches. So we had a reputation of being the Couch Church. So you guys can be the Kitchen Floor Church. I don't know if church is the right word. I'm jumping
it's
way ahead.
Yeah.
We'll nix that one right away.
So Mark, tell us about you.
My name is Mark Ostlund, and I am originally from Utah, but I moved to California for about 18 years, working in Silicon Valley. I've been an entrepreneur my whole life, and a Mormon missionary. And now I'm doing electric bikes, and that was my retirement hobby that got away from me, so I'm back working again. But I've always had an interest in community and kind of the things that some of us left behind as we moved on from dogmatic thinking, and that's how I found myself as one of the founders of Oasis Salt Lake.
Well, thanks for coming in. And then last but not least, Angie.
Hi.
Hi.
So, let's see, what about me? I'm a principal by day. My day job is a principal of a charter school. I had a mixed faith marriage for 16 years. And I grew up a military brat. So I'm not a native Utahn, but I met my husband at BYU. And anyway, Oasis has been a vehicle for me to provide some community for my family that I wanted and lacked.
Well, perfect. Thank you for coming in. I do greatly appreciate it. So let's start at the beginning. You guys kind of pushed back on me when I said Oasis a church. So let's start and say, why is Oasis not a church?
Well, define church, John.
Oh, you threw it back at me. Well, I mean, you generally, when we talk about congregations or churches, you have people who share a common sort of metaphysical belief and a common belief about the way they should live the world, you know, their ethics or values. And then they kind of strive to make themselves as a community, right? Mm-hmm. So which of those do you lack?
I would go with the metaphysical part. So one of our core values is reality is known through reason. So we do not have dogma unless you consider just our core values, which are things like people are more important than their beliefs and being accepting, those sorts of things. Core values, but not dogma and nothing metaphysical, obviously.
Now, structurally, you're the executive director. Mm-hmm. So one of the things that especially Mormons and people transitioning out of Mormons, we have a very highly hierarchical organization, mm-hmm. very top down. So people get kind of nervous whenever anybody's in charge when you're talking to ex-Mormons. So what does your structure look like?
Do you want to speak to that since you're on the board?
Yeah, sure. So we have a board of directors that is kind of just in the background and addressing things as they come up and approving the expenditure of donations and funds for various things. We hire the executive director. We're very fortunate that Angie stepped up and took that role and provides interesting speakers and musicians for us every Sunday. So some people think of Oasis in terms of TED Talks and
house
live
band.
Music.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's a time when we can gather and hear something really interesting and also socialize and meet new people, and that's probably the most important part of what we do.
I'd like to clarify the higher part. It's a dollar. I get a dollar a year, so I'm technically an employee, but really we're all volunteers. So
I'd like to speak to the experience of hierarchy or lack of it.
Yes.
In Oasis, which is that any community group, whether you are, you know, the police-friendly society or the Adopt-a-Highway Program Society or Oasis, you've got housekeeping to do, which is very boring, but without doing that, community can't happen. You've got to have somebody who's willing to book the speakers, like Angie has done so well, or provide a roof where everybody can meet, people who are willing to make sure information goes out on the web. These are they're tedious and boring. They have to be done every week. And thank goodness we're organized enough for that to happen reliably. But the experience for people coming in, and I speak as somebody who just walked in, was I felt no barrier to me becoming part of the conversation. In fact, I think it was probably the first or second time I came to Oasis, the board members were talking about some of the core values and way forward for the organization. And I just put my hand up and put my two penneth in, and it got listened to. I felt heard. I've always felt heard in this organization. And that there was definitely room for me to make a difference. I mean, not in maybe big ways, but every time I've stepped up to make a contribution, it's been welcomed and supported, and I felt that, yeah, there was no barrier for me to overcome.
Well, thank you for bringing that all up, because as people transition out of the church, they have some expectations of the way, you know, the LDS church we're talking about here, that they have certain expectations about how an organization should run, and a lot of those are deeply ingrained in LDS culture. And I'm not saying they're good or bad, they just are. One of those is the stigma against volunteering, that you're supposed to sit back and wait, and then the hierarchy, the organization's supposed to tell you where you're going to serve. Well, that's great and all, but it's not how the rest of the world works. That in the rest of the world, oftentimes we need people to step up. And in most organizations, we don't want to put somebody as the Cub Scout leader who doesn't like working with children. We don't want somebody working with the youth program who doesn't get a charge from that, and a charge in the right way and not the wrong way. So I think there's this expectation in LDS culture that the leaders are getting some kind of reward from it. And because that's kind of part of the culture, and there's sort of this anarchist view as they leave the church that they want the benefits of an organization, but then they're like, oh, we're all egalitarian. Well, I have news for you. If you're in an egalitarian organization, the odds are there's probably a couple of people who are doing most of the work. And as I've been watching these communities for about 15 years, the problem is we burn those people out because they're probably doing 5 to 10 times as much work as other people are. So what I want to point out to is you've got an organization, a structure, which is necessary for these organizations to survive. Because, yes, a bunch of ex-Mormons or whatever can get together and form a little community, but they tend to not last because they don't have the structure and they don't have the organization. And I think for me, one of the things that, that Oasis has done very well is create that staying power, that, that community that can survive the individuals.
Yes, and people tend to let their passion show, and we're watching. And so when somebody steps up and shows an interest in a certain thing, we encourage that. You know, they want to work with the children, they want to work with youth, or they want to work with humanitarian causes and help us find ways that, as a community, we can contribute to the larger community in helping humanitarian causes.
As long as we're talking about leadership, I regret that we have to make this point. We probably should. John DeLynn is not part of the leadership of the Salt Lake Oasis group at all. He kind of helped or promoted when you were starting, but it's not a John DeLynn organization.
No, John was instrumental in creating his community of good up in Cache County.
Uh-huh.
And became interested in Oasis and kind of made that community into an Oasis. And brought some of the founders of the National Network out to Utah, which is where some of us met them. And then Salt Lake Oasis has never been a John DeLynn thing at all. He has spoken for
right.
it. We've had him out to speak, but we've also had like Doug Fabrizio and all kinds of people. So, yeah, he has not been involved in our Salt Lake community.
So our Oasis community has been around for how long now?
We just had our 3-year anniversary celebration last week.
Congratulations. Yeah. I mean, that is a big deal to make it that far without like burning everybody out. So the national organization has been around for how long?
The national organization had been around for 4 or 5 years before that?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah.
And where are the biggest communities out there in the United States?
In Houston and in Kansas City are the two largest.
I've had friends who were involved in the Kansas City one, and it was, you know, they always spoke so highly of the organization and that secular approach. So let's cut down to the nut. What do you guys believe? I mean, what is Oasis? What's in between you and nothing?
Well, I would say that we are looking at what we do stand for and are moving toward rather than what we were or used to be. In all cases, and we are not a post-Mormon organization by any means. We have all kinds of people.
Yeah, I'm not a post anything. I'm just a straightforward heathen. I always have been.
Yeah. And so we have 5 guiding core values, and we have a code of conduct to address anything that might come up that would detract from the community. And the core values, I mentioned some, but the first one is people are more important than beliefs. Reality is known through reason. Meaning comes through making a difference. Human hands solve human problems, and be accepting and be accepted. That's pretty much it. It's pretty humanistic.
So it sounds like you can believe what you want about the universe, about gods, angels, metaphysics, but those are just not instrumental to what binds the community together.
Right. So when we say secular, we mean secular like public school. We're not promoting any one religious belief. We welcome all beliefs, and if you do believe something that others don't see as being known through reason, you will get pushback in our community, but it's about diversity of opinions and voices.
We value diversity, so we do have common values that everyone is there to be a better person, mm-hmm. and to have a place where you can come and contribute and both receive and give in a larger context.
Does that provide enough stickiness? I mean, because one of the things that friends and I have debated over the years is if you're not working for the ultimate reward of heaven or trying to avoid the ultimate punishment of hell, what makes people want to stay involved? Why do you guys stay involved when you could stay home and, you know?
Because it's fun. Because it's fun, and I'm a human being. I'm a out of Africa tribal off the savannah person that has to have a tribe. the deep basic part of being a human being is to be in community. And that's been there before religion. It's certainly there after religion. Mm-hmm. And if you've been like me, you've never been a religious person. It's just as powerful a pull for me as a human being as it is for anybody else. And what makes it sticky is after being there for quite a while and getting to know people, that's where my friends are at. Mm-hmm.
There's so much in there that I love, you know. But we can take the friends thing. I think one of the problems with our society is it's so easy to just surround yourself with people that you have an immediate connection to. And I look back to my childhood being raised in the church, and the things I'm most grateful for are things like that I got to home teach. I remember this family, this guy, Fred Call, that I was, he had been a bombardier in World War II. When I was 12, I didn't recognize how significant that was, his experience. And I didn't recognize these bonds and these relationships I was building, but I was around people and I was able to form more rich relationships. And sometimes if we're just selective, oh, I like those guys, let's go to dinner, and you don't have that continuity of being around them, it interferes with the ability to make rich, rich connections.
Yeah. Plus, today we find ourselves in these silos of thought that are fed by the social media and other things where we're just constantly hearing the things that we already believe or people who are like-minded, you know, feeding us what we want to hear. So this is why diversity of a community is so important. So you can actually rub up against people who are thinking slightly different than what you are, who have different beliefs.
Or even intergenerational. It's so easy just to surround ourselves with people who are in our cohort. Mm-hmm. And we're not thinking about that there's different perspectives of people 20 years younger and 20 years older that are informative.
Precisely.
So what does a service look like? How
service? No, that's an interesting.
I
interesting
way to put it. The wrong word.
How's our TED talk with live music?
That's the pushback we were talking about. Right?
I also want to say there's nothing magical about Sunday except everyone is pretty much off work and it's kind of a lazy day and that's the day. Nothing special.
Well, us are used to having a Sunday experience, mm-hmm. particularly those who have dogmatic roots, and some people just show up because that's what they're used to doing on Sunday.
Church is something you go to. Religion is something that you consume once a week. Yeah. So what do you call it? What do you call your Sunday?
A gathering.
The Sunday gathering.
Yeah.
So every Sunday you all get together?
Yeah, we get together same time, same place.
Where are you at?
It's at 623 South State Street in downtown Salt Lake.
623.
It's right by
By the bayou?
It's kind of by the bayou and kind of by what's that antique clothes shop?
Decades.
The retro clothing shop is right
The stateroom. Are you guys on the east side or the west side?
We are on the east side of State Street.
Kitty corner from the Grand America. On State Street.
Which mm-hmm. building?
The venue is called Ember and it's used for weddings and parties. It's an event center. They don't use it on Sundays, so we get a good deal. Cheap rent. And that's where we meet. So.
At what time is your gathering?
11 o'clock. It's just exactly the right time. You sleep in, have some breakfast, mosey on over. We have never in the history of Oasis actually started at 11 o'clock.
Oh, that but is going to change there, Angie.
But
if
today,
I've got anything to do
11:10 is our Oasis standard time. So, but we always do generally end on time, which is 12:30. So we don't belabor it. But we have a good program. It's you walk in, there's we pride ourselves on having coffee and tea and hot chocolate and drinks and available every week. So we have that. We have chat. We have excellent music, and when we start, we have a musical number that is just, you know, I don't know, we have a few musicians that come every month for a standing rotation, and then we just rotate in new people as we find them, and we have never had bad music at Oasis.
No, it's been great.
I don't want to jinx us or anything, but it's always been amazing, so we're kind of tapped into the local music scene, and so we have a blues duo that plays, we have acoustic guitar. Today we had Mindy Dillard, who plays the banjo and is sort of an Appalachian singer. That was really great. So we have music. We don't do a lot of singing together, but she did do a sing-along number at the end today that was cool. And then we have a community moment, which is just anybody from our community who wants to have 2 cents worth of putting their opinion in can stand up and talk about whatever they would like. We've had everything from how to fix your toilet to today it was on love. And
wait, is it a free for all? Anybody can get up and say, or do you have somebody who
you... No, it's scheduled in advance. So people will come and ask me, can I do a community moment on this day? And then I'll put them on the schedule and introduce them. And then they talk about whatever they would like to talk about.
Yeah, I did a community. I've been attending Oasis for only about 2 months, two and a half months. And so I decided to do a community moment. And it was... It was scary to do, but I wanted to, like I say, be heard, but also be part of that community. And I could get on the schedule. Yeah, I was welcome to do that. And I decided to speak on something which might have been a bit random, but it went down pretty well, I thought.
Well, you're a good speaker, Sarah. Yeah, we have all kind of interesting ones. So then after that, we have the all-important 10-minute snack break.
10 minutes.
And so, you guys take a break in the middle?
Right. Like, we don't want to, like, this isn't hard.
That's the best idea I've ever heard. Because
we take a break right in the middle.
I struggle at every conference, everything I ever go to, because my attention span isn't that long. Uh-huh. So we said an hour and a half. I'm like, all right, I think I can do that. But with a break, I can.
Yeah, the break. And then during the break, we have wonderful snacks and goodies.
Encourage people to introduce themselves to someone they don't know.
Yeah, exactly.
So that, you know, the community thing happens.
And then parents, if they have children with them, around 10 and under, they can take them back to our children's program. We have a one paid child care provider who's a teacher, and then we rotate volunteers in. So that we have 2 people back there. They're both background checked. We're pretty careful about that. And we've also created a curriculum for them based on our values. So it's usually things like, today we're going to learn about how to be a good friend. And there will be a little story. Excuse me. There will be a little story and a lesson there for them. And that 10 minutes gives them time to take them back. And then we come back and have some more music, introduce the keynote speaker. We have had presentations on, I'll name some. Mark, everything from like sexual intimacy to
beekeeping
to today we heard from John Gold, who is the executive director of The Sharing Place, on the impact of grief and children and how to help them.
We had chocolatiers.
Oh yeah, sometimes we'll have tastings. So if someone's talking about chocolate or red wine or something, we'll have tastings afterwards.
We had a gentleman from the NAACP come and really challenge us to look at who were we being in the matter of race and racism in Salt Lake. That was yeah. I thought that was powerful.
We've had performance poets. We've had, let's see, we had Dr. Clark from the University of Utah. He spoke from a pretty strong atheist point of view that week, but we've also had people that are still practicing members of the LDS Church as well.
Being in Salt Lake City, and of course this is Sunstone, so we're kind of looking at it from a Mormon and progressive Mormon and ex-Mormon perspective. What is the biggest challenge to running this organization here in the heart of Zion?
You know, we haven't had any misbehavior or problems that way with anyone coming. I think it's just consistency and making sure that, I mean, it's a big challenge. So for 3 years, you know, we've organized a speaker, a musician, the food, you know, paid for the venue. We have financial transparency.
I would
keeping track of all that.
One of the biggest challenges is geographical, you know. Mm-hmm. Mormons in particular are spoiled by a church on every corner. And we're in downtown Salt Lake.
That's
a lot of them just don't want to drive that far.
Yeah, it takes me 19 minutes to get to Oasis from my house in South Jordan. Now, granted, it's Sunday, there's no traffic.
Uh-huh.
But I cannot tell you the number of people who are like, oh, I'd like to come, but it's so far. I'm like, really? Really? 19 minutes? That's so far?
I remember when I first started traveling for business and I was on the East Coast in little towns. You'd see all these churches. You know, there'd be the four square. There'd be the four churches. You know, you'd have your Episcopalian and your Methodist. And they'd all be like right near each other. And I'm like, what is this sort of religious background? It was only a little while later that I figured out, oh, they don't build churches in the neighborhoods. They build them in the city, the town, and everybody comes into the town. You're right. There is a certain expectation of that. And I should frame out, when I'm asking that question, Mormons actually make decent neighbors. They're not real there's not a lot of like protesting going on in Salt Lake City ever, at least not by the conservatives, not by the Mormons. So I don't mean to imply that they would like picket or harass, you know, or anything.
No.
But you're going to get a lot of people in religious transition, especially people fresh out of the church. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to make fun of those folks, because I've been one, quite possibly some of you have. How do you make the community welcome, or what's the challenges you run into dealing with fresh ex-Mormons or progressive Mormons?
I'm going to say that I feel like we are a little further down the line there. I think that by the time people come and really truly become involved in Oasis, they're kind of past whatever those stages of grief are in their transition. We don't have a lot of anger. We had someone do a community moment on quirky weirdness of Mormon history, but it wasn't in a mean way. We don't focus on any of that because it wouldn't have any relevance to all the people who are post-Catholic or post-nothing, or, you know, you know, like Sarah over there. And so I don't, it's just not a focus. Now, we did in the very first, 6 months of Oasis, someone had to make a rule. It came up at a board meeting. They said, hey, no more post-Mormon jokes. Stop getting up and saying, hey guys, it's the first Sunday of the month. It's Feast Sunday. So, you know, and that has stuck actually. So that's a bad example. We do have that. But we were making a lot of jokes, you know, give a donation. We're not asking for 10%. You know, a lot of that was coming up from those who were post-Mormon, and some that weren't were like, you know, that's just not something that we relate to. So can we leave that behind? So I think that was kind of a thing of the past for us.
Yeah. I think in terms of people moving on, you know, like I was one of the early members of a large group in the South Valley called South Valley Mormons in Transition. It's a Facebook group. And I think there are over 800 members of that group now. And I often will get on there when they're talking about, well, you know, where can we go? You know, I'm like, well, that's a really good question, because I think if you're Mormons in transition, you have to be thinking about what you're transitioning to. And Oasis is one of those places that you can go. And it's beyond belief. It's beyond the dogma.
You look pretty righteous, so I'm not sure you're going to understand this simile, but most podcasts are like beer. You have to drink a lot to get that buzz. The Sunstone Magazine podcast, on the other hand, is like whiskey. Small glass, big buzz. That's because our podcast isn't about interviews, conversation, or witty banter. Rather, it presents audible quality recordings of Sunstone's best articles, essays, fiction, and poetry. Do you want to hear what the best LDS minds have to say when they say it perfectly? Then this podcast is for you. Listen to some of our free episodes at patreon.com/sunstone, and then join us for a weekly shot of the best of Mormon thought and experience. And yes, you'll be able to drive home safely afterward and get a temple recommend if you want.
Well, I really like where you're going with it, because I think that it is a transition. There is a faith transition, but a transition is not an end state. Mm-hmm. And in the ex-Mormon and progressive Mormon world, people just sort of go quiet. And then another generation comes along. So if you go into those communities, it feels like there's a perpetual, never-ending state of unsettledness, of uproar.
Yes.
And And I know some of those people are looking for community. I was at that time. We talked about how I, you know, I was a Unitarian for a while. And that's an important need. But the more important need, why the one reasons I brought you here is I've observed that as people transition out of that, which they eventually will, they can find themselves fulfilled in a lot of ways. They find themselves that they can engage the world the way they want it to. They can talk to whom they want to about what they want to. They can decide their own ethics, sexual boundaries. They can decide how, their own things about alcohol or other substances. And then people settle into their lives. And I've observed in my own life and in others, there's often this thing that's missing. And I think that thing that's missing is strong community connection. So I really like the fact that you're not focusing on like a rescue effort for fresh people out of any church, no. But a place that people who, when they've settled into their own person, can land.
And I want to clarify, that is that whole stage of anger, whatever that looks like, is perfectly valid. Like, that's a stage you go through. I went through that stage. Many people do. It's not anything that we would be upset about. It's just that most people in Oasis are thinking more about what we can do. You know, I mean, Oasis has a threefold mission. It's to bring the opportunity for community together. And I'm a person who says, first of all, it's not a person that's going to make a community. It's going to be grassroots. You can't, you know, in my day job, you can't force kids to be friends. You know, friendships happen for so many different variables. People will get along or not. And so what you do is you provide opportunities for people to interact with each other, and eventually community forms. So it's valid to be angry. It's fine. There are plenty of people after our gathering that you can find to talk to about that if you really want to talk about, you know, Mormon issues or whatever. It's just not a focus of our community. We exist for education, to create that environment for interactions, and to do humanitarian work. Often when you're post-religion, you had this venue that was easy to go and do service because it was all set up for you and it was expected. And suddenly you find yourself, you know, I meant to go do something, to volunteer, whatever. I just never did it. Mm. And so we provide those opportunities as well. The other thing is, it doesn't come without any effort. So we'll have people come once and look around and be like, well, I didn't make a best friend, so, you know. And so I just think people have to recognize that just it's relationship. It's about showing up and being able to be authentic. I think that's the huge part about it. Some people have not been accepted for who they are, no matter what they believe or what they think. And just to be able to be your authentic self is like the big promoter of future community, with hard work and showing up and doing something.
I love that, because I found the more you do show up, the more you put yourself into it, the more fulfilling it is. And I did a kind of a personal inventory the other day. I was like, what actually makes me feel spiritual? What makes me feel connected? And it's the relationship with my wife, relationship with close friends, and doing things for the community, actually doing service. I will feel more connected to the universe, more connected to my community, just by doing and not consuming. And that's why I think the Sunday gatherings are important, and they help me, these sort of things help me make connections, like you're saying, but they don't leave me ultimately fulfilled, right? What leaves me ultimately fulfilled is actually giving back, not just consuming. We live in such a consuming-based culture that you really have to push against it to not just be swept away in its tide of just more Netflix, more Amazon, more, you know, sitting in the stadium and watching and cheering on. You really have to put in an effort to get beyond that in your own life. So I like what you're saying there.
I think those of us who might have experienced pain or isolation from a religious transition in the past, some of us see Oasis as our opportunity to mitigate that for someone else. You know, to provide a space where people can come and kind of get the joy of it the way that we have over the years. Because I think that a lot of us who've been doing it for a while, it's not like we need to come to Oasis. Like, we get together outside of Oasis. We see people all the time. We're fast friends, lots of us. And we also have multifaceted lives with lots of different social groups. But there's something different about saying, I like quilting, versus here's a community, multi-generational. You know, I have a son who's 16, and some of his biggest mentors and biggest influence in his last 3 years of teenagehood have been Mark's sons, who are, how old are John and Adam? They're married children, you know, they're older.
Yeah, they're 20s.
Yeah, 20s and 30s. So that has been huge. It's not about isolation and silos. It's about integration. And my son doesn't really remember not coming to Oasis, and it's only 3 years, so it's just kind of...
Yeah, it's like when your basic human needs are met, which includes some social interaction with other people, you get to the point where you want to flourish, you know, and where can you go and flourish, and where can you go and make a difference, as you said, John, and actually receive and give, you know, maybe like you were accustomed to before you went through a transition. So, yeah, that's kind of what we're about.
I got sidetracked. I want to finish up what a gathering is, because at the end of that keynote presentation, we have Q&A, and that's really important to us, because Q&A is the difference between hearing, quote, truth with a capital T from someone who is an authority, and hearing someone who may have expertise on a subject or is sharing their thoughts. Q&A from the audience is a time for pushback if people have different opinions, or for clarifying, or just to get everyone involved in the discussion. And that's usually a really important part of it. And then after that, we have some more music, and then we usually have to kick everybody out who keeps staying and talking for a long time. So that's how it goes.
So besides the Sunday gatherings, what else do you do? We've talked about, you know, service and building these structures. What other kind of activities or things do you promote?
We have a camp out scheduled in July.
Yeah. Don't tell everybody about that. I'm just saying it's already packed.
Yeah.
But no, yeah, we do. We have a yearly camp out. Last year we had two, actually. Maybe we need more than one. We do a standing service project with the Burrito Project. Have you heard of them?
I've heard of it, but not everyone listening has, so okay. Go ahead.
Yeah, so you get together and roll burritos, rice and beans, and roll up a bunch of burritos, and then you go out and distribute them to the homeless in Salt Lake City. So that's a standing monthly event that we do in conjunction with them. Today, when we heard from John at the Sharing Place, he let us know that the house that they use for their support groups for children, they use volunteers to clean and do the yard and all that. And so Sarah asked if we'd come and do that.
Oh, I put my foot right in there. Yeah. I put my hand up and said, can we come and clean it? And I said, oh, Sarah, yeah, you can organize that now. So I guess I am.
So
for those that may not know, the Sharing Place is a place for grieving children and families to go and talk through things.
Yeah. It's a really great organization. So we've done some things to help with hurricane relief to our fellow Oasis community that's in Houston. When they had the hurricane, we raised some money and reached out to them. So, you know, just various humanitarian events. And then we have social events. One important thing that I think helps people get to know other people in Oasis better are community groups, and they're more geographically specific. And they're kind of grassroots, you know. If somebody comes to me and says, I'm in Harriman and I want to do a community group, then they can host it. They host it in their home. It's one night a week for an hour, and it only lasts for 7 weeks, so it's not a permanent commitment. But it's a way to be in a more casual setting, to have time to, you know, chat more and get to know each other better, to bring the kids if they want. And we have a little series of videos that are like a 5-minute icebreaker on a topic that we can use as sort of a curriculum for those community groups if people want to. And so I think most of the community groups do use the video as a springboard for the conversation. But anyway, those are some of the opportunities for sort of getting to know people outside of just coming on Sunday. What else do we do? We used to do pub trivia night. We do that once in a while. We have a yearly karaoke fundraiser, so that's fun.
We've done dances and art.
Oh, we dipped our toe into secular scouting for a little while. We actually started some navigator troops, and they lasted kind of based on the charismatic leader of the troop. And then when the troop leader was kind of done with that, they kind of fizzled out. But, you know, that's okay with us, because we're, like you said, we want to find out what people are passionate about and have them doing what they want to do. And there's no pressure. We don't have the carrot of heaven and the stick of hell, and nor do we want it. So.
Now, you hit on something that's always been really important to me, or that I've lacked with my children, is that intergenerational. Because my cohort, my friends, we all tend to be about the same age. We tend to have our kids basically in the same status. So that's something that's very important to me. What does the group look like in terms of age range? You know, you said there are youth programs, but how is the mix?
So we have teens that come and go. We have one dad who likes to play D&D, and so he plays D&D with the teens when he's there during the keynote.
They love
in case they're bored.
He works the Oasis values into
the D&D
being a dungeon
story.
Master.
Yeah. So that's pretty fun. I don't know. Some of the 20-somethings complain that there's not enough other 20-somethings. It's a pretty big, broad mix, though. Everything from really small children all the way on up to Mark. So.
Well, and there's a lot my age, so don't single me out.
No, I'm just teasing you a little.
So I think that one of the key things about the intergenerational that's really important is having the structure of a child program available, particularly for young parents who are coming. Certainly, I know, and you may remember this, Angie, but there are some weeks as a young mum when the only conversation you're having is about peanut butter. And when children have to go to bed, that child care program allows mum and dad to come and be part of the larger community, even if it's only for like 45 minutes an hour during the keynote speech, and to be able to have meaningful conversations with other people in the community. I think especially for women, that's an area where their community needs kind of fall down a rabbit hole. So it's an essential part of the program that is addressed, so that all generations can meet together. And there's power in having all of those mix of generations. Yes, maybe 20-somethings might say, oh, well, I wish there was 50% 20-somethings. I don't know why they do. But for example...
Dating.
That's kind of what I think. But for example, one of our best community moments, and I don't know if I'm allowed to mention about Campbell's.
Oh, no, go ahead.
So Angie's teenage son did a community moment where he was having an issue in his dating life. And he decided off his own bat that he would do a community moment where he got up and simply asked the entire room for advice from our lives. Plumbing into the great wealth of experience that was there in that room. And I think we got some pretty useful information there.
And so did he, He called it crowdsourcing his relationship.
This is a great tip for anybody under 30. If you want people over 40 to like you, just ask them for your opinion. You don't have to actually listen to it while they're talking, and you don't have to do anything about it, but if you ask them, it makes them happy. Well, that's fantastic.
Hi, I'm Lindsay Anson Park, Executive Director of the Sunstone Education Foundation. I want to invite you to our weekly Sunstone Firesides. Do you remember those? Firesides that they used to have dating all the way back to the 1930s, when the LDS Church would hold monthly meetings to discuss really important gospel topics. Those meetings became known endearingly as Firesides. In January of 2019, Sunstone launched a new podcast that incorporates a nod to these firesides. Featuring a weekly evening podcast, it will display a range of hosts, all women, as they chat with diverse guests from across the Mormon spectrum. The hosts are all female-identifying that represent a broad perspective in Mormonism. These podcasts will be released every Thursday evening, so you can have that fireside feel brought right into your living room. So grab a cup of cocoa or coffee, since at Sunstone there is more than one way to Mormon. Snuggle up under a blanket and listen to incredible interviews by and from incredible people. You can support women and their work in Mormon studies, which is desperately needed, by donating at sunstone.org or becoming a monthly subscriber. Go to sunstone.org and click on the podcast tab for more info. We hope you enjoy it as much as we do.
There is a persistent, real resistance to any sort of organization. I think you guys have articulated well why it's important. As you've observed people coming in, what, because you all obviously believe in it, what sort of benefit do you see coming into the lives of the folks who start to engage? Again, I'm coming from the basis of we have a culture that kind of, once you leave the big organized churches, it's like church, big church or nothing is the cultural basis. And you guys kind of have a lightweight thing. It's not a church, provides that structure. But how do people's lives improve by that?
Sarah touched on one, and I'd just like to reconfirm it. I thought I would be a once or twice a month ovation, you know, like... pick through the menu of speakers and say, well, maybe that one will be interesting and show up on that Sunday. But I decided to make a commitment early on until the organization got some critical momentum. And in the process of doing that, I started realizing that I didn't need to do that anymore because we reached that momentum. But I found myself still coming on a weekly basis. And I asked myself, why? And I said, oh, because this is where my friends are. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I look forward to going. And even if the speaker sounds like a topic I'm not even interested in, I am often surprised. They really surprise me. Angie does a great job of lining up speakers. And some of them are just nuggets that you wouldn't even expect.
Mm-hmm. I think that's you're hitting on something that's actually quite profound there, which is that there are different ways to participate in any kind of community group. One way that's valid, nothing wrong with it, is you can come along and basically treat it like television. You come in, you sit back, entertain me, mm-hmm. let me see, and then I'll judge it at the end and think, yes, no, whatever, that's fine, and perfectly happy to have people come and do that if they wish, but what they're going to get out of it is pretty limited, I would suggest. Mm-hmm. It's when, as you said, Mark, that you actually take a step towards commitment. And that sounds like a big, heavy word, but I'm just saying, like, okay, I'm going to sort of prioritize my Sunday mornings and set them up so that it's possible for me to attend. Mm-hmm. That's when you start having the transformation in relationship between people. Mm-hmm. When Angie knows that, oh, it's Sunday coming, as pretty sure that Sarah's going to be there, that has an impact on the relationship between us. There's an almost an expectation, I don't want to put that too heavy, but you know, I'm looking forward to that, I'm going to see my friend Mark on Sunday morning. It pulls me, and it pulls more out of me as well. I'm a different person in that environment as opposed to just being a spectator. I'm a participant. And that is where profound human relationship starts to get nurtured and grow.
Start to feel like you've found people who will have your back when you need it, when your kitchen floor needs
When my light. Kitchen floor... Okay, it seems like a small thing. I was upset. My kitchen floor looked like the Himalayas, and I did not know what to do because I've got a 16-year-old at home. Who am I going to ask to come into my home and be there while she's there? It's like, you know, it was a concern. So I reached out to my Oasis community, and within a week I had a new beautiful kitchen floor. It lovely, it really was. And that is something that I was hoping to get out of a community, that when there's a problem in your life, and okay, that's a pretty small problem, we all have bigger problems, but there's at a minimum, there's that community out there that you could reach out to and say, you know what, I'm really having a hard time right now. And people will reach back out to you.
I think there's a lot important to what you said there. Again, as I've observed these communities, we talk to our friends, we say, is there anything I can do for you? The simple fact is most of us don't know how to answer that question, even when we're in dire need. Because we're not socialized to do that at all. And I think you speak to the strength of community. Friends and I have been kind of seeking a community for a little while, and you're on our docket. We're going to come visit you pretty soon here. But, one of the issues we recognized when we were talking is you formed real relationships, real loving friendships, when you recognize your friends are in need without them saying anything. Because oftentimes when we're in need, we don't even know what we need. We don't know what we want. And what I've enjoyed in my engagement of communities, be they like the Unitarian Church, the Mormon Church, is the opportunity I have had to serve. You talk about your floor. I've loved it when those opportunities come and they fall right in front of me of something I can do where I can help. Because I want to contribute more in the world. I'm dissatisfied with the state of our country, with the state of our world, with the state of our culture. And it's easy to sit back and read the New York Times and just get madder and madder and madder and madder. And I think that what the healthy thing we need is we need a positive outlet. Rather than just be mad at the Democrats or mad at the Republicans or mad at the state of the world, you can go make a little difference that makes a big impact in people's lives. And to me, that's the strength of what you're doing. And you don't form those relationships. It's like dating. You know, when somebody says, we went on a first date, it was magical, the chemistry was there, and we got engaged, you're like, oh, slow down, please. Because it takes time to build real relationships. And that's what I've heard in everything you're saying. Yes. Mm-hmm. With Oasis, whatever, it allows you to be near people, and those relationships, the rich, deep, meaningful friendships that can oftentimes happen with people we don't expect, but you have to be in proximity. You have to sit together. You have to talk to them. You have to
engage. And like you said, John, let's not discount the role that religion has played in fostering community for thousands of years. You know, when humans come together in community, it looks a lot like church. Okay, let's just say that's that, you know, let's not throw the baby out with the bath. You know, community is important. And when people come together fostering community, this is what it looks like. Mm-hmm. And it's a little messy. It takes commitment. It takes work. But it's a place that you can make a difference in other people's lives.
And it's also, I just want to bring up that there's a lot to be had as an individual. There's a component here of personal growth and of self-actualization. And it comes through putting yourself in situations where you interact with others. It hasn't been an easy thing for me, all the things I've done for Oasis, but it has been tremendously impactful just in my personal growth in small ways and large ways. In ideas, the ideas that I've heard other people express. Knowing Mark sent me off into studying Buddhism for a while, and there's just some things I've taken with that have changed me as a person. Small things like public speaking, you know, Campbell voluntarily did 2 different community moments and is completely unafraid to speak in public now. That's something you get from giving a talk in church every week, you know, every year or whatever,
right?
But not usually from something outside of that. So those are just a few little things I can think of, but there's a tremendous opportunity. There are people that I met at Oasis that the first time I met them, I thought, ooh, they're just really not my sort of person. Mm. And I look back on that and think, what an arrogant jerk I was, and how little did I know about people, you know? So there are some things, there are some personal work that we can overcome through engaging with others that are maybe not at all like ourselves.
And I think that with that last core value, the be accepting and be accepted, like having that present in the Sunday gatherings is what allows us to get beyond that, oh, I'm not sure that's my kind of person. Mm-hmm. Because
we've stated
the degree of safety that is there that allows people to really show their true selves, or some part at least of their true selves. And it's when you see that, when you glimpse that in another human being, you realize that all along, oh, there was something there I just completely missed. And actually, there are...
You value it.
Yes, there's a value there and a new way of looking at the world that can only expand my horizons by me interacting with that person.
I think that's an excellent point. And that being accepted, I know my experience in the Mormon church wasn't terrible, but and it wasn't like I was putting on a mask, but my personality is this big thing just like everyone else's is, and only this much of it was ever actualized in church. Because if this was out of order, you know, I was more liberal in my politics, so I just didn't talk about it. I had different ideas, nothing that was even that collision-y with the church. But I did never felt like I could be myself. And to go to an organization like Oasis, where you can be authentic, that doesn't mean you have to be an asshole, but you can be authentic and be accepted for that. Mm-hmm. That is such a sacred and binding thing that you find that you come out of these strong communities, quote unquote, in the church, and you find they're actually kind of weak because the people are not bonded together. It's mitigated through the authority. And what I'm hearing from you all is this is rather than it's a distributed network. It's not something that's top down, which is where its strength comes from, and that can be so powerful.
I made a point last week when I talked in, you know, honor of our three-year celebration, that it's very obvious if you come to Oasis and meet me that we are not led by a charismatic leader that we can not do without. So, and if there's any power to grab, it's a job. So come grab it, man. There's no money. There's no power.
And to what you're saying, and building on what Mark was saying just a minute ago, in my personal belief, you know, we evolved as human beings. We've been talking and singing and dancing and staring at the fire together for longer than we've been speaking. Mm-hmm. And I believe the arc of history, my personal belief, is that we developed these ways, these ceremonies, these rituals. They were not respective of any god. I mean, you look in ancient history, and it's pretty clear that this village had this god because it was the god that protected the fig tree that was over here, and this village. And when they met each other, like, well, my god is this. Well, my god is this. And it was fantastic. And they kept. And then these organized religions came in and started kind of taking what we had as human beings, what's part of our core nature. It's neither owned by religion or lack of religion. It's us. It's human being. And they took them and they used them to extract resources or war or violence or sex from us as people. And I think what's happening now is we're in the globe, we're pushing away from those organizations, which is good. But there's so many who are cutting out basically what's part of being a human being. And you guys rightfully so push back on me when I define these things as church. Because the churches stole it from us in the first place. And that's I liked, Mark, when you were talking, because it speaks to that these things are fundamental to what it means to be human. And they're not owned by any organization.
And you used the word sacred a moment ago, and I really like that. And I'll tell you why. Because religion has somewhat usurped the higher language of human potential and capacity. So words like spiritual and sacred and divine, when we recognized this some years ago, Angie actually said, well, we should come up with a program, and we'll call it hashtag take it back. So every time we use one of those words, you know, just to tell people that we're not meaning it in the traditional religious context, we're taking it back as humans. Okay. Yeah. So, you know, the rise of the nuns from the Pew Research poll, where people are saying, well, I'm none of the above religions, but they describe themselves as spiritual, but not religious. Okay. And we all have experiences where we've sat in an ecosystem that's in balance and felt one with nature and we were in a sacred place, having a sacred experience. And these are just the higher forms of human experience, and that's what I think we're striving for in our community, is to actually foster that.
Well, I think that's beautiful and probably a high note to end on. Is there anything you'd like to add to this?
I want to just invite your podcast subscribers, come and check us out. We're not scary. It's all you have to do is walk through the door and
take a seat.
Probably one of us or somebody's going to come and say hi, but we're not going to force you to stand up and bear your testimony in front of us. But if what you're looking for is community and human connection and some opportunities to make the difference in the life of another, then it's a big shout out to you all. Just come and check us out. We'd love to have you.
No dress code. Wear what you want. Wear your jammies if you want.
And you don't need to bring any money.
No, you don't. No, we do ask for donations for those who can do it. We're trying to get to where we have, sustaining contributors that pay our basic bills each month, so we don't have to worry about it. But we've been able to be financially fine for the last 3 years, and so we do ask for donations for those who will give them. And I know that's a trigger for some people. I had somebody message me, "You had me right up till you asked for a donation," and I'm like, well, sad for you, because I'm sorry to tell you that it takes money to pay for this venue and business liability insurance and childcare and coffee and musicians. It just does.
I know it's a trigger, but people who listen to me know that I bring it up every week. You need to get over it, because there are big organizations who have lots of money. And I know that they've ripped you off in the past, but you're not going to combat that by just withholding. What you have to do is find organizations like Oasis, organizations that are giving back to the community and are transparent and are open with their money, and then give them as much as you can, because we know those dollars go directly. And oftentimes, I mean, even big, I don't mean to beat on somebody like the Red Cross, but you they're a huge organization. You give them a dollar, you have no idea where that dollar is going. You give your dollar to Oasis, you'll know exactly where every penny of that dollar is going.
Drink it in coffee a minute later.
Well, what you guys are doing really resonates with me. My friends and I will be coming to visit you soon. You're on our list. And we kind of came to that conclusion. So we're always thinking, well, what can we build? What can we do? And you know, I've had this sort of epiphany that it's one of those that comes back over and over again. You forget, like, you don't have to build everything from scratch. There's somebody out there who feels like you do, and they probably move the ball down the field. And the best thing you can do is find them, find community with them, and then help move it forward. The only way we're going to wrestle this world back from the edge of big corporations and big churches and big things pushing us around is to quit playing their game and start building what the world we want to live in locally with the people around us. All right, well, wonderful. Thanks so much. And I'll see you guys at Not Church on Sunday soon.
Sounds good. Thanks, John. Thank you.